The BOAG World Show is back, and we bring with us tips, tricks, and recommendations from our panel of experts. This week's show is sponsored by Proposify and Awards. Welcome to BOAG World Show, the podcast about all aspects of digital design, development and strategy. My name is Paul BOAG, and joining me on this week's show is Andy Clark.
Hello.
Marcus Lillington.
Good morning.
Ian May.
Hello.
And Ryan Taylor.
Hey, up.
Could you be any more of a walking stereotype, Ryan?
I'm not wearing my flat cap, so.
Oh, that's something.
That's because you're indoors.
That's not hardly an excuse, really.
just don't get distracted if the whippet runs up your trouser leg.
That's a ferret.
Yeah,
a ferret.
You're mixing things up there, Paul.
Well, who has whippets then?
Northerners, but they don't go up their trouser legs. That's ferrets.
Oh, does it? Oh, okay. I don't know. I'm southern born and bred. How do I know these things? Nobody gives you a manual to understand Northerners.
Quite.
It's a good job, though, really.
I think I quite like a manual. I need a manual for life, generally. Don't you think? It'll be useful.
Isn't that GTD, Paul?
Yeah, getting things done, that's very true. That certainly helps. You could have done with a manual this last week, Marcus, looking after a baby again after so long.
I know, but I've said for years, because now I'm a granddad and I'm an old person, that I can never go back to babies again. God, no, you know, like permanently. But we've had a mum and dad have gone off on their honeymoon. I have a cold like everyone else in the country as well, as you can hear. And it's been great. So I was wrong. I mean, as you said, Paul, before this started, I knew, even though it was like 5 days of having it, there was still an end point.
So. Unlike poor old Ryan, where it will never end.
Well, congratulations, Marcus. I didn't know that you were a granddad now, but congratulations.
Oh, she's 18 months old, mate.
So right.
I've been a granddad for a long time.
That's all behind the gossip I am.
Yeah. No, it's wonderful being a grandparent. Like there's an old joke that what do grandchildren and grandparents have in common? A common enemy.
Yeah, I like it. You should have kept that for the end.
Oh, well, I've got another joke for the end.
Okay.
Which I think I've done before.
So oh, well, there you go.
That's my new joke.
So, Ryan, how old's yours now?
She's 14 weeks on Friday.
Ooh. Wow. So you're still
proper
in the
new.
Yeah, agonisingly painful stage.
She still smells like fresh bread.
She's
lovely. She's the most chilled out baby I've ever known. We went to pictures, all three of us, and
I know, I saw the picture. How incredible is that?
She had a feed while we were in there, but then she just sat on my knee and just watched the film, and she didn't cry once, she didn't murmur once, nobody even knew we had her there.
That is freaky.
She's awesome. She really is. She's such a chilled out baby.
That is, you could do, well, yeah, but when you're on number 28 like you.
that's your 19th child, isn't it, Ryan?
Well, you know, if you're exceedingly fertile like me, then you might as well.
Real man. Oh, no.
My Instagram feed at the moment is all John Hicks's dog and Owen Gregory's baby.
Yeah.
It's about as interesting as this podcast at the moment.
Oh, are we boring you? All right, then. All right, Andy. We'll change the subject. What did you get?
My son's 25, so what am I going to do?
So you might be a granddad soon.
Oh, don't.
My daughter's 25, so there you go.
So, yeah, you really could be, Andy.
So what did I get for Christmas was going to be your question.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Go on. Went,
do you know what I got? I got a gorilla experience.
Ah, when is that going to happen then?
It's going to happen in October when we come back from Australia. Right. And it's at Bristol Zoo, and I get to go behind the scenes with the keepers and the gorillas.
Oh, you're going to love that,
so,
aren't you?
Thank you to my dearest darling wife for basically reading my mind, which she always does anyway. But yeah, so I get to go and hang out with a great big bunch of muscly, hairy, It's a bit like being in Rill, really. Gorillas, yeah.
Yeah, you might get an arm torn off. But
you say that your wife read your mind, but you're not exactly subtle about your obsession with gorillas. The number of times you've posted on Twitter, if you love me, you'd buy me this, and it's some gorilla-related paraphernalia.
Yeah, but you know what? She's never bought me anything off eBay, and neither has anybody else. So if you're out there in listener land and you see one of my tweets, you know, you just might think I've got a...
Yeah, but Andy, you say this, but every time you post something like that, it's original kind of from Planet of the Apes kind of props and things at like £3,000 a pop.
Well, that's because I'm hoping that one of my, you know, internet benefactors is going to be generous enough to buy it for me, because I can't buy it for myself because she would kill me.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm under no illusion. Benefactors
at all? No, exactly. And you know, so you know, I'll buy an action figure, and a box will arrive, and her first comment is it's not more plastic crap?
But that's what wives are supposed to do, isn't it?
It is.
It's like, really? It's taken me 2 years to persuade drip feeding. That's how you do it. It's taken me 2 years of drip feeding my wife with how great it would be to have a drone before I finally got my drone.
Mm. Now, I've been thinking about your drone because I've been seeing your pictures.
Yeah.
We might be jumping the gun here. But are you actually allowed to fly it over a populated area?
Now, that is an interesting question. Actually, you're talking about when I flew it around the parish church.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
I got permission, basically. So I'm flying it over the parish church property. But obviously, you're not 100% accurate. So and the parish church is in the middle of the town. The rules, it's really interesting. The legislation is, as always, behind the reality, if that makes sense. So the guidelines are you've got to be over a certain height, which I was. But then it does say, oh, well, you shouldn't fly them over densely populated areas. But it doesn't really say what that is. And the you know, it's not actually legislation, it's guidelines. So maybe is the answer. I wouldn't make a habit of doing that one.
Looked great, though. I mean, the from a little HD camera, I'm presuming that's like 1080p video that this...
No, it's 4K video.
Whoa.
I mean, obviously, when you saw it, it had the shit compressed out of it on Facebook or wherever it was, yeah. Instagram. But, you know, you look at the original footage, it is stunning.
Have you got 4K telly?
Yeah, so it's like, you know, if you you know, on Apple TV, I don't know whether you've got Apple TV, you've got those aerial shots that they have on Apple TV that are just absolutely stunning. It looks that kind of quality. I mean, obviously the location isn't as nice as their kind of Hawaii and things, but you know, I'm absolutely gobsmacked at just the whole thing. It really feels like living in the future. You know, you let go of the thing, it just sits in midair. It'll follow you around automatically. It'll circle, you know, it's circled around the church spire. Mm. Well, actually, I did a version of that where that was me doing it manually. There's another one where it just does it automatically for you. It'll fly itself home, right? So if you suddenly... like lose sight, you press a button and it comes back to you. So it is witchcraft. It really is.
So I mean, any idiot can use it then, basically.
Absolutely. My son has been now just implying my son is an idiot. My son had a go. Well, actually, he's better at it than I am because it flies like using a games console, basically. My dad had a go on it. I haven't persuaded my mum or my wife to yet, but it just, you can't mess it up, basically. But that said, because it's so easy, you know, these things are being bought for kids or teenagers. You know, these things are, and you get a bit blasé about it. And the truth is, things can go wrong. And so this is where it is a bit concerning, in my opinion, you know, that you can just fly these things around.
Absolutely. If I had one of those when I was a teenager, goodness knows what I would have used it for.
Yeah. I mean, in my opinion, as somebody that's benefiting from none of this legislation being in place, I think I should be sent on a little course, you know, a half day thing, doesn't need to be a lot. And then at the end of that, I get registered in some system somewhere. My drone gets registered and I am, you know, like registered like you would be with a vehicle, basically. Because in my opinion, it is a bit lax at the moment.
Well, yeah, basically, somebody could fly one into something high, it dies, and then falls from 1,000 feet onto somebody's head.
Yeah.
And they're dead.
Yeah. So,
yeah, not good.
And setting aside, you know, the fact that there are a lot of areas in the UK where you're not allowed to fly them, where, you know, it's... and places that you would really want to. For example, just up the road from us, there's this beautiful, scenic, lovely view that you'd really want to fly your drone at. Now, it wasn't unless I bothered to do the research and read up on it that I discovered, well, there's a airfield just down the road, and you don't want to be flying a drone around an airfield. No. But I had to go and do that research to find that stuff out. Which is just crazy biscuits. But there you go. That's, you know, that's the way things work, isn't it? The world has to catch up. I mean, this Christmas has just been the scariest Christmas for me ever. Because I've got a drone. That was my Christmas present. My wife got a 3D printer. And my son got virtual reality headsets. Now, if that isn't living in the future, I don't know what is. That just insane.
I got a really nice pair of slippers.
There you go. That's much more sensible.
And some socks.
Ooh, you've got all funny sounding, Ryan.
Ryan's gone echoey. He's turned into God. God's northern. Oh, no. Echo.
I got a very nice pair of slippers, though.
Did you? It was good. Do they hover?
Ugg slippers.
Ooh. Ugg slippers?
Yeah. Woo. Very nice.
I've never heard of them.
Yeah.
What did you get, Ian?
Well... I didn't get anything.
Why? There's a reason for this.
Yeah, it's a bit of a long and complicated story. I won't go into it now, but let's just say I found myself underemployed as of the 1st of December, and therefore Christmas was cancelled somewhat. Oh. So, yes.
So are you currently looking for a job at the minute?
I am, yeah. Funnily enough.
Oh, right. So, go on. Right, okay.
Paul?
Job, sorry, yes.
Just a job. Could you introduce me to Ian?
No.
We haven't.
No, I couldn't. If you don't know Ian May, then you don't deserve to know. Basically, Ian is an unemployed waster.
Okay, fine. I've got a picture in my head now.
Yeah. That kind of, you know, think what a bottle of wine in a paper bag. Yeah,
got it.
Yeah. You know, kind of, yeah, that's basically it.
I've been watching repeats of Judge Rinder on ITV3.
Oh, no,
for the past 5 weeks, basically. Mate.
That's bad.
Well, yeah. you have a platform now, Ian, of about 5 listeners where you can pitch your potential opportunities to. So, you know,
so what
let's
are you looking
pitch.
For? What are you looking for, Ian?
Well, I was head of project management at an agency just outside Reading. And I have, since this happened, I've actually set up my own little company.
Oh, cool.
For people who want help with their agency or their project management team, who'd be interested to talk to me. So I'm kind of like looking for some consultancy or things I can help people with. So I've talked to a number of people who are sort of in the market for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I suppose it's a bit like, I also had a chat, you know, Brett Harnett over in the States.
Yeah. He's doing a similar thing, yeah. Isn't he?
So I suppose if you like, I'm probably like 2 years behind where he was.
Yeah.
But I had a really good chat with him and he basically said, go for it, you know.
I totally agree, mate. I mean, working for an agency sucks compared to just kind of chilling out by yourself. I mean, 13 years of putting up with other people's shit is just, you know, you're better off moving on, mate. Mm-hmm. Move on.
You get to go and play with your helicopter as well.
Will you stop calling it a helicopter, Marcus?
Don't mind me asking, Ian, which agency was that? Because I'm near Reading. That's the only one I'm asking.
It was called Creative Jar.
Oh, I know Creative Jar. Yes. Yeah. Although I know Creative Jar because of you. That's why I know Creative Jar. Well, they're better off. No, you're better off without them. Yes. I nearly got that the wrong way round, didn't I? Oh, dear. Mm. No, that's really interesting, actually, Ian, because I think there's a real need. I think there's a real need because people, agencies or indeed even internal organisations, are always under-resourced on project management because they feel like it's a luxury, and then they discover that, you know, oh, crap, we really need extra help. Yeah. So I think there's certainly a value from that point of view, you know, bringing in a project manager as you need to as work expands and contracts. But also I think a lot of organisations just need a lot of help being more structured and organised in the way they operate. So I'm sure things will fly with you. Well, at the end, we'll ask you where they can find out more about you. So that's cool. Right, let's quickly move on to our first sponsor, and then we'll get into what we're actually going to be doing on this season of the show.
Ooh, who's our first sponsor, Paul?
Every time you do that in this sarcastic tone of voice, like sponsors aren't the bit of the show that people care most about.
The sponsors are the most interesting bit of this podcast.
Well, actually, I have to say, we got some damn good sponsors on this this season of the show. And one of them is Proposify. Now, Proposify has sponsored the show before, actually.
They have?
Yes. Yes, they have. Yeah. I get confused because it's a product that I've used. And so I can't remember whether we've done it on the show or where we've done it.
My jokes.
Yeah, exactly. So Proposify is sponsoring a whole season, so you're going to find out lots about them. And it's great. It's great if you write proposals, which we all have to if we run our own businesses or even if we work for agencies and stuff like that. So Proposify is a simpler way of delivering proposals to your clients, basically. It streamlines your sales process, which, of course, helps you close those deals faster. And they reckon on average it saves users about 2 hours on each proposal compared to using something like Word or InDesign or Google Docs or whatever you use. So managing proposals is a kind of bit of a tedious, painful chore, isn't it? And Proposify kind of helps with that by helping recreate the process, you know. So everything from the creation of the proposals through to actually closing the deal and all the stuff in between, it kind of streamlines the whole process. So it's online proposal software, if you haven't gathered, that allows your whole sales team to kind of get a bit of a competitive edge when it comes to creating proposals. So it's all about saving time. It makes sure that leads never go cold, that you can get those proposals into your clients' hands a lot more fast, and that you've got content in a reusable library that basically lets you reuse proposal content time and time again, which, let's be honest, we all do. And it makes it really easy to do that. It also helps you to organize your team a little bit better when you've got multiple people working on proposals together, because you can get quick access to everybody's proposals. You can get quick access to little kind of templated chunks so that you're all using things in a consistent way. It's got things like roles and permissions built into it and comments. You can comment on each other's stuff and keep track of version history on proposals, obviously, which is really useful if, like at Headscape, I know that if Marcus, say, writes a proposal, Chris always then checks it. So as a result, you can manage all the kind of back and forth in there as well. So according to Proposify, it'll close your deals generally about 60% faster. I don't know how they calculate these things. Because the client can view the proposal anytime, anywhere. And also it's got online signatures. So they can actually sign the proposal there and then. There's no need to kind of send documents backwards and forwards, and that's what they say makes it so much faster. So if you want to find out more about Proposify, you can do so by going to proposify.biz/BoagWorld. proposify.biz/BoagWorld. All right. So that brings us on to our discussion portion of the show, where we're gonna do something slightly different this season to last season. So we did a roundtable format last season, but a lot of it was kind of questions and discussion based stuff. This one time we're gonna go a lot kind of faster, and the kind of focus of this season is very much on tangible takeaways. So it's gonna be like recommendations, tips, tricks, all of that kind of stuff. All right. So hopefully you'll go away from each show going, I can do that. And, you know, that's something tangible I can take away. That's the aim anyway. I don't suppose it'll take long before Marcus starts talking about cricket or no. Andy starts talking about apes. But we'll try and keep it vaguely tangible. Right. So I thought I'd kick off, if that's all right, just to show the others my expectations, you know, show how a pro does it. So
you are a pro.
I am a pro at something, I'm sure. It's certainly not podcasting. So yeah, I thought I wanted to share with you an app. That's my thing. It's really embarrassing, the story behind this, because as people know, I do mentorship. So I mentor a lot of different people. And I'm supposed to be the expert with all the answers. And I was working with one client recently, and we were talking about usability testing and how it never quite happens. And I was giving him this long lecture about, you know, oh, you need to do more usability testing and, you know, get yourself something like Silverback, which is an app you can download to run usability test sessions really, really well. And I got to the end of this long diatribe and he said to me, well, we've been doing this, and this, which was like 10 times as much as I was suggesting. And then he said, are you sure Silverback's the right tool? Isn't it not supported anymore these days? Which Correct. Is true. And he said, we've been using this tool called Loopback, which I'd never heard of, right? So basically, I then went and checked out loopback.io, and it is absolutely amazing. It is the best tool ever. So I was left like looking completely stupid in front of my mentor. Check out this tool. It's so good. Loopback.io. Now, they're not paying us or anything yet. I'm working on it. But you've got to check out the tool. It's really good. So what it is it's like an online app. Although it's got a Chrome kind of, you know, you can get those Chrome app things, which work locally. So you can run it locally if you want to. Essentially what it does is, allows you to, do usability sessions. So you can do them face to face, right? So in the same room where essentially, you just pop out of the Chrome browser, you launch the, loopback.io app, you do your usability testing by going to whatever website it is that you're going through. And all the time, it's recording what's on the screen. It's recording what's on your webcam, on your and obviously your mic as well. So you can run these whole usability sessions like that. You can also do remote sessions where you set someone a task and they can go away and do it and just talk, you know, as they do the task. So unfacilitated usability testing, which means you can do a lot more people that way. And then the third one is you can do facilitated remote testing, right? Like you do through something like GoToMeeting or something like that, where essentially you can be talking to the other person via VoIP, talking them through the process, and they can then try the, you know, they do the task or whatever, and you can ask questions at the same time. And then it keeps all of that together in one library of usability testing. And you can go through, and this is the bit I absolutely love. You could go through the videos and identify cool little clips and save them out. All right. And those clips, you can then embed in a web page, or you can download and put in a keynote presentation. You can do whatever you want with them. So you can essentially take out the key points. You can also annotate videos, do all kinds of really cool stuff. But it's the ability to save out clips and edit the and save them, embed them in web pages that I particularly like. There's kind of different packages, but the entry level starts, and I just think this is a ridiculously embarrassing price, and they should probably double it. It's $29 for per month to be able to interview as many people as you want, which I think is really good. If you want more collaborators and more people watching and that kind of stuff, the price goes up. But that's the basic entry price. So I think it's a really good tool and really means you've got no excuse not to do usability testing, really.
What was the URL for that, Paul?
It's called loopback.io.
It's called lookback.io.
Oh, lookback.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot.
Loopback.io is an API framework for Node.js.
Oh, okay. No, you don't want that.
API framework going...
I have no idea what you just said.
Yeah, exactly.
Look back look is what...
Back. Look yeah. back.
Lookback.io.
That I'm is very useful, Paul.
if I got the URL wrong.
No, we obviously do this stuff a fair bit. Chris tends to do more than I do, so I will pass that on to him. He will appreciate it.
It is by far the best tool out there, in my opinion. But there you go. Okay, Ian, are you happy to share something with us?
Okay, so... obviously I've been at an interesting few weeks with setting up a company and stuff like that, and so I've had loads of things to do that I wouldn't normally do. And one of them is trying to pick an accounting package.
Oh yes, the pain.
So I've been through quite an interesting process. I did a bit of asking the community on the DPM Slack channel what they thought, because I've never worked freelance before, so it was kind of like didn't know quite who to ask or what to ask. I listened to, I think it's season 12 of this podcast, where there's a whole series of things about setting up your company. So I got recommendation from free agent from that. Mm-hmm. So on Saturday night, whilst my missus was watching The Voice and whatever else was on telly, I was sat there trying to pick an accounting package from a business. And I got down to a short list of zero... free agent and cash flow.
And I've heard of cash flow.
Because that one, I think it's my cousin who works freelance and recommended that to me. So I sat there going, well, which one of these three things that all have free trials and all cost a similar amount of money should I go for? So I did a bit of internet searching, as you do, and I found this site called getapp.com, right, which basically compares... business apps for all different types of niches. So it's not, you know, it just so happened that they have accounting solutions on there. And it's almost like, you know, like when you buy a car, and if you're a bloke, you'll compare all the stats about the cars.
Yeah.
It'll do that for you. So, and really easily. So I basically put the three things I wanted into this website, got a comparison table that I could just run my eye down, and it's got reviews in it. And so I was able to make a decision based on what it told me rather than having to trawl through each of the three websites. So
this is brilliant. Yeah, I love it.
It's quite cool. I mean, I'd never seen it before, and I was like, why haven't I seen this before? Because it's actually really rather useful. Particularly if you're like me and you like making the right decision and not spending your money on something, then having to go back and buy it again because you picked the wrong thing.
I've got to ask, which accounting software did you go for?
I've gone for Free Agent.
Yes! I don't know why I feel like that's a personal triumph on my part. You've joined my gang, I guess. It's like joining my team at, you know, football or something.
Well, it was partly having heard it on the podcast. The other reason I picked it is because my second favourite was going to be Cashflow, and then it said it didn't do multi-currency.
Oh,
and I was just like, if I want to invoice in dollars or euros in the future, which is not inconceivable, it would be silly to have to switch packages to do that. So I just thought,
Also, but
I mean, it was a combination of things. But yeah, so I recommend checking that out because I found it really useful. I haven't tried it for anything else, but I dare say, because it does things like look at what industry you're in. So if you're in a charity sector thing, it'll probably have recommendations for that. And
Oh, that's good.
What was it called again?
Getapp.com.
I'm looking at just those three that you compared right now.
Mm.
And actually, you're right. Really good. What a great way of doing it. Oh, and I've just spotted the... I've spotted the comments at the end.
Mm.
Yeah, there's lacking multi-currency feature. Who wrote that rubbish? Wow, brilliant. Absolutely love it. That's really good. Cool. Now, it's interesting. Headscape's just moved to zero, haven't you?
Yes.
You don't, like you know. Oh,
yeah. Yes, I know that is happening, Paul. That's yes. All I can comment on there.
Yeah, I bet you've never even looked at it, have you?
Yes. No.
Andy, what do you use?
Well, you see, there's a story in this. Well, I don't use anything because it's my lovely wife that does all of the business stuff. And, I mean, she's not an accounting person, although she's been doing accounting stuff for like, you know, 18 years or so. So she does what she does very well, and she knows what she knows very well. And she knows...
In other words, she does it in Excel, doesn't she?
No, she does it in a 12-year-old copy of Sage that runs on... Windows XP in a virtual machine on her MacBook Air.
Okay. Well, Headscape has been running on Excel, different Excel spreadsheets for 15 years, and I can't believe it. I mean, this email came through from Chris saying it was more to Brian, our finance guy. I was just copied in, basically saying I think I need to do this properly now, and I nearly fainted. Mm.
Well, our accountants know Sage because, you know, lots of accountants know Sage, and she's got a workflow set up that works for her. And every time I suggest using something like FreeAgent or Xero or some kind of, you know, modern approach to accounting, she says, I won't tell you what design software to use.
Yeah.
Right.
And I have no argument to that at all.
No. You've got nowhere to go.
There's a Xero place to go. No. So yeah.
Ryan, what does Snowdivide use?
We use FreeAgent. But yeah. I've used FreeAgent since Rowan gave me a 3-month free code back when it was just the three of them building it in a garage.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I've been using it since then. But I do feel a little bit bad with FreeAgent because I've got a get satisfaction thread on for a feature that I requested that they've never come back to, and it's probably been about 8 years. Periodically, people posting it saying, when's this feature going to come in? This is crap. I feel really bad that it's there, but there are so many people that have kind of up-liked it and want this same feature that I feel like deleting it. I'm just doing them a disservice.
What's the feature? Is it something really obscure?
No, it was just like deposit handling deposit payments.
You
know, when you take a deposit and that's kind of, you put that towards the project before you invoice for anything else. They don't really handle that very well.
No, they don't.
There are ways around it, but it's a little bit kind of obscure how you've got to do it efficiently.
Yeah.
And they keep posting periodically. Every time someone comments, they'll comment saying, yeah, we do discuss this internally, but we've got to restructure. And they've been saying the same thing for about 8 years. But I don't think I'd use anything else. I really like FreeAgent. Otherwise, it's...
No, the trouble is, with anything like this, with selecting an app, it's always trade-offs, isn't there? There's never something that's... unless it's built custom specifically for your needs, it's always going to be a trade-off. Yeah. But that's why something like Get Apps is so good, because at least you can quickly see the bits that you want. You know, oh, this one doesn't have a Windows Phone app. Well, I don't care. I don't use Windows Phone, etc. You know, that kind of thing. It's very good. Okay, moving on. Andy, what have you got for us?
Well, I've got a book. But before we get into which book it is, I just want to say it's going to be only a few weeks, not even months. It's going to be a few weeks before CSS Grid is available in all modern versions of our browsers. So I think this is going to be a bit of a game changer. And I really, really, really hope that people just won't swap from using the same tired old kind of layout patterns and just re-implement them with using CSS Grid, because it does offer so much more creative control and so many more opportunities for really interesting layouts. And I just think people should not only be starting to learn CSS Grid now, but they should also be looking for new places to get inspiration for layout. Otherwise, we're just going to end up again with the same, you know, square spacified web that we've had for the last few years.
So can I ask a question about that?
Mm.
Because because these days most of my stuff is strategic, I haven't really been following CSS Grid. I know it's a thing and I know it's coming. What can you kind of give me the sales pitch for it? Why should I care? What does it do?
Well, first of all, it allows you to break out of the normal kind of layout patterns that we've had. You know, you don't have to lay everything out in, you know, blocks of rows and columns in the way right. that we do now. Although obviously it does that. It makes the markup that we put into the HTML markup a lot cleaner and a lot more layout independent. Mm-hmm. So we will finally get to that stage, which we've been promising ourselves for 10 or more years, where markup is kind of separate from presentation.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it actually makes the process of laying out a page so much easier, particularly when it comes to responsiveness, because
okay.
you can basically define grid columns and rows and just assign blocks of content either to automatically lay themselves out across these kind of grid lines, or you can specify which grid lines to attach content to. So it is fabulous. You need to get your head around it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's because I don't do a lot of coding these days, I kind of don't feel the need as much. But, you know, I should at least know, you know, how it works and stuff and what it's capable of doing. So, I, again, it's on my list. And one of the things I've got to do, Rachel Andrew, isn't she, produced a whole load of really good, like, tutorials on this stuff.
Yeah, she's done a heck of a lot of, I mean, she did a little book for A Book Apart, a little mini thing.
Okay.
And, I can't remember whether her little pocket guide had some stuff in it. But, yeah, and she's also recently been doing a whole sort of video tutorial. I think she did, like, 12 videos up until Christmas.
Right.
Which is pretty much where I learnt stuff from. So
okay.
I think you should check that out, listener land. Anyway, back to me book.
Yeah, sorry.
What I think is that we need more inspiration in what we are yes. doing. We can't be led by bloody UX people that want everything to look the same. We need to start spreading our wings a little bit. And what better place to look for layout inspiration than, you know, magazine layouts and stuff that people have done in the mm-hmm. past that have been really, really distinctive. And I picked up this book, and there's a link to it in the show notes. There's an Amazon link in the show notes if you can get a copy. And it's called The Graphic Language of Neville Brody.
Oh, Neville Brody. That now, takes me back.
Yeah, now, you see, yeah, if you were a graphic design student, which I wasn't back in, you know, the day, then you will have heard of Neville Brody. I mean, he is currently, he's the head of communication, art and design at the Royal College of Art. He's obviously grown up. Yes, exactly. And he, you know, he's done all kinds of stuff. You know, he founded the font typeface library with Eric Spiekerman. He was famous for creating the Fuse interactive magazine back mm-hmm. in the day. But I remember his work back in the 1980s when he was art director at the Face magazine. Because famously, he was art director at the Face and at Arena magazine back in the kind of, you know, late 80s. And this book, The Graphic Language of Neville Brody, basically it's the pretty much the first half of his career, where it goes through all of the stuff that he did for record covers. So there's a lot of, you know, very kind of striking design when it comes to, you know, record covers and things like that for bands like Cabaret Voltaire. But the stuff that really interests me is the magazine layouts, particularly what he did for The Face back in the early 80s. And, you know, I'm looking here at the book and I'm looking at some layouts. And I went onto eBay and I bought a whole stack of original Face magazines from the 80s. You know, I've spent a few quid on eBay actually getting some good copies of these old magazines. And this book's got some really great examples. And his style, particularly with the way that he kind of challenged layout and the way that he did some really beautiful graphic typography work, that kind of deconstructed type thing that he was sort of so well known from, is all in this book. And it's brilliant. And I love to look at some of these examples and go, I wonder how we could do that with CSS, Or yeah. I'll look at a particular element and I'll go, that's a really interesting, distinctive little visual element. What could we use that for on the web? You know, could we make that into a link or some kind of, you know, interactive element or whatever? So my book choice, I'm going to do a different book every week.
Oh, okay.
And my book choice for this week is The Graphic Language of Neville Brody, and I cannot recommend it highly enough.
I've got to say, I've got to back you up on that as well, because when I was at art college was when he was at his height. And it was part of, there was a huge, I think it was called the New Wave movement of kind of typographic and graphic design that was going on at that point. And I had a book called, what was it called? Oh, it's the same book. No, it can't be. Wouldn't have been around then. The Graphic Language of Neville Brody? I don't know. Anyway, I had some book that was packed with these kind of rich typographic designs that using typography as a design element in its own right, as yeah. you know, as an illustrative element. And it just so influenced all my stuff. You know what you're like when you're a young student. You blatantly rip stuff off, don't you? In this kind of, not because you're trying to plagiarize, but just because you get so excited by something, don't you? And Neville Brody was the guy for me. So yeah, that's awesome. The fact that we could do this kind of stuff in CSS is just going to be brilliant.
Well, on the subject, sorry to butt in, but I talking about album covers, I got another very cool Christmas present, which is The Raging Storm. It's a book about the album graphics developed by Storm Thorgerson and Storm Studios that did they did Dark Side of the Moon, right. Probably their most famous one. But yeah, fabulous kind of coffee table book about all of the designs they've done for album covers over the years. I'd highly recommend that. Gorgeous book.
So it's interesting, isn't it, how we really need to be looking so much further for our inspiration. And it's also the other thing that's really interesting, Andy, over this one. It creates this huge dichotomy in me, because you've now just stirred up all of those feelings and inspiration that I had when I was a young designer. And now I'm that boring UX person that you just talked about earlier, that's saying it all needs to be sensible and usable. And I refuse to accept that those two things are mutually exclusive.
Yeah, so do I. And I think that nobody's talking about going back to kind of, you know, mystery meat websites that nobody can use. But whenever you start talking about this kind of level of creativity, you always get the boring people to come back and say, as long as it works, then that's okay. I mean, to give you an example, I wrote an article for 24 Ways back in December about making our style guides much more inspired. It's a topic of mine at the moment, because I think that, you know, style guides should be inspiring. They shouldn't just be a catalogue of design elements, you know, and that they should actually be, you know, inspirational and demonstrate a design, not just catalogue the parts of it. And Anna Debenham, bless her, tweeted something along the lines of, yes, but, you know, style guides don't have to be pretty. As long as they're functional and work for your team, that's okay. Well, you know, it must be very boring to live in that world, mustn't it? So I think that creativity is, you know, it's not exclusive to functionality. And in fact, quite the opposite, that when you design something so thoughtfully, it actually helps the communication and it helps the functionality and it makes people understand things better. And that's what these people have got to remember.
Yeah. And I have to say, I think the other thing in that particular example that you just gave with Aaron's comment and yours, the other thing is you need to encourage adoption. You know, people with something like a style guide, if you want people to adopt it, if you want the organization to embrace those kinds of standards, you've got to show the design can look cool and you've got to interact with people on an emotional level to encourage their adoption. Otherwise, they're just going to ignore it. And that's where I think it's really important to make something engaging. UX, I've always said, creating a usable site should be the base standard. Right? It's the lowest. you know, the minimum we should be doing. Then we should be inspiring them and exciting them and doing all this other stuff. And that's where you come back to stuff like the work of Neville Brody. That's where you can start exciting people about design as well. So anyway, we could carry on that subject forever. But yeah, check out The Graphic Language of Neville Brody.
And there'll be a new book each week.
Woohoo! Right, Marcus, you're going to talk about boring contracts.
Kinda.
Nice way to introduce his topic.
I know, it's nice of me, isn't it, that?
It's okay. It is kind of boring, but it was
It's a very good point, actually, I have to say, Marcus.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. The best thing I saw on the telly over Christmas, when I was lazing on the sofa most of the time...
Sherlock.
The second best thing I saw on the telly was a documentary film called... Mm-hmm. Rubbish title, called Dinosaur 13. I don't know if anybody's seen that. And it was basically a story of a couple of brothers called Larson, if I remember rightly, who basically were fossil hunters out in South Dakota. And fabulous story. I won't go into it in detail, but they found in, I think it was 1990, they started off in the 60s and 70s, but in 1990, they found the largest and most complete Tyrannosaurus rex fossil in South Dakota or Wyoming or something like that. But knowing where it was is actually relevant, because they would kind of drive around this huge wilderness and stomp through kind of forests and across plains and find this stuff. And anyway, they found this, as I say, the largest and most complete Tyrannosaurus rex fossil ever found, which was known as Sue, or named Sue, after the woman in the team that actually discovered it in the first place. It's worth looking up this story. It's fabulous. But anyway, long story short, the owner of the land that they found it on, they knew, sort of a kind of a bit of a friend, and they basically agreed to pay the guy, I think it was $5,000, to take the fossil away, where they'd, you know, obviously spend years getting it out of the rock and cleaning it up and doing all the things you do to fossils. And they tried to basically get the guy to sign a contract saying, you know, just a simple contract along the lines of, we're going to pay you $5,000 in return for, you know, for taking this fossil off your land. And the guy said, oh, we don't need to do that. We're all friends. Just a handshake. And anyway, their lives then went massively downhill. They were investigated by the FBI. The main guy ended up going to prison over the fact that they'd stolen this stuff off the land. It's much more complicated than I'm making it out, but it made me think of what can I talk about on this episode. And it just popped into my mind of, you really ought to have a contract. Really, the benefits of having a contract is just so that everybody knows where they stand, and it legitimizes what you're doing. Kind of, it makes something official. Whereas if it's just, yeah, we'll be fine. Even if things don't go wrong, it kind of, having a contract in place just makes everybody understand that this is an official thing that we're all working on, and there is a contract over there that we've all signed and we've all agreed to. I've never actually we have contracts for pretty much every project we do, and I've never referenced one, but it kind of really helps all the parties, us and whoever we're working for, knowing that it's there.
Yeah, I totally agree, Marcus. I've been a bit slack at it, if I'm honest, for a while, and more recently, not from a legal point of view, but as much just to clarify to people in black and white exactly what they're going to get. Mm-hmm. So the podcast sponsors is an example of that. Until probably last season, I'd never really bothered putting any kind of agreement together for it. But I started to do it, not because I'd had a bad experience or not because I was worried about legal ramifications, but simply because I wanted them to know exactly what they were going to get and what I expected from them in return as well, in terms of delivering stuff on time. So, yeah, couldn't agree more.
Well, I guess my few tips that I have on... yeah, basically getting a contract in the first place. If you're brand new to this, which I guess applies maybe to Ian to a certain extent here, there are many kind of template contracts on the internet that you can just go on a search and you'll find them. And find something like that, or ask a friend who runs a business, look, would you mind if I used your terms and conditions, the contract you currently use? Take that as a starting point and get a little bit of legal advice, and so that you can kind of fit it to your business. So that's basically what I'm saying is you don't have to write, a contract or terms and conditions from scratch, and you don't have to pay somebody thousands of pounds to do that. You can find them on the internet. Another thing that I found out over the years is that certain clients aren't happy to work with our terms and conditions, and that's fine because they'll probably have their own and they're probably fine. So, you know, you don't have to be kind of rigidly stick to these are our terms and conditions, you must sign them. So that's, there's usually a way to work with your clients. And the kind of final tip I've got here is that be prepared to accept that some people won't accept all of your terms and conditions, and that, you know, it's a bit of a back and forth process. And I suppose the final point on that is, because that's likely to happen, that maybe you want to bias things slightly towards you, because there's likely to be a bit of to-ing and fro-ing on the process. So your initial set of terms and conditions might be slightly biased towards you. That's it on contracts. Very, as I say, never referenced one in 15 years of business, but it's just kind of nice to know that they are there.
Can I ask a question, Mark, on contracts? Just, have you got any clauses in yours about IP and who owns what?
Yes. Well, I was just about to say that it would be remiss of me at this stage not to mention my contract killer.
Yes. Oh, yes, of course.
And I don't know whether Ian has seen this, but back in 2008 it was, I basically open sourced the contract that I'd written, because we were in a similar situation where, you know, we'd been in business for 10 years pretty much, and we'd never really done anything with contracts. And whenever we had signed contracts that clients had given us, they were all these kind of, you know, massive legal tomes that, you know, we didn't really know what the heck we were signing or not. So I set about writing my own contract in very plain language that set out really clearly what we were going to do and what was expected of us and of the client. And it did cover things like IP. Mm. And I decided after about a year or more of using this thing and having clients actually really like it and say, gosh, you know, it's the best contract that we've seen and we could really understand it, etc., I decided that I'd open source it, and I wrote an article on 24 ways and put the thing out there. And if you Google Contract Killer, you'll find it. We've updated it several times. And on the IP side of things, basically it says that as designers, we own the IP of all the work that we produce, and that we license it to the client for this one particular job. Essentially that's it. And quite often people will come back and they'll kind of query that clause. Often we'll give the IP away. Or sometimes we'll negotiate more money. But that is one of the things that's in there. So shameless plug, but do a Google search for contract killer.
Okay. That's really good. The contract killer. That's where I started when I had to do these kinds of things. It's because you panic and go, where do I begin? And that's a really good starting point. Ryan, what have you got for us to wrap up the discussion this week?
Sorry, I just started talking over the topic. I was going to say, I think we're still using a variant of Andy's contract.
Yeah.
Contract. I got really excited, like, when we started talking and, like, sharing stuff, and then my brain started going, you know, oh, tell them about this, tell them about that, pick me. And then I realised we've got 15 weeks of this, so I'm going to have to spread this out a little bit.
Yeah.
But
just pick one.
I'm going to pick the one that's probably the most interesting for you guys, as well as the listeners. But one thing that I wanted to mention was, I got a book for myself at Christmas, and it's 1001 Quotations to Inspire You Before You Die.
Okay.
Right, which is a really cheery title. But yeah. I thought I'd share a quotation.
Go for it.
And then tell you about an app, right? Yeah. So this one I really like. This is by Isaac Newton. And the quote is, "Tact is the art of making a point without making an enemy."
Oh, I like that.
And I really like that one. Because I'm not often very tactful. and make lots of enemies. But the app that we discovered a while ago now, it's been around a while, and we've been using it for about 6 months, is Front. So front.com.
Yeah, this is a good one.
And it's like a mail app, mailing email app on an email client on steroids. Mm-hmm. It just does so much. And we were using it. We've downsized quite a bit in the last 6 months, but at one point there were like six of us, and it was great because you can share an email that someone sent to you without having to forward it to somebody else on the team, and you can have a conversation about that email in like a chat, and like threaded emails get listed, but your conversation can kind of get slotted in between the emails so that you can, you know, someone could email Dan, for example, my business partner, someone can email Dan, he can share the email with me without having to forward it to me. We can have a conversation about the email and then he can reply with, and it's just one email that's just getting, comes in and gets sent back to the client, which is really good. You can hook it up to various things. It doesn't just have to be an email account. You can hook it up to your Twitter, so if someone tweets you, that comes into your front app, Facebook, and various other social networks. And it, on the more expensive plans, it can be integrated into lots of services. So you can turn an email into like a Trello ticket, or you can turn an email into a GitHub issue, or various other bits and pieces. So we've become a little bit dependent on this. It's become really useful for just managing everything. So we get so many emails through, and you can assign emails to people to deal with and various bits and pieces. My only qualm with it, as much as I love it, is it's bloody expensive.
Yeah, because it's, what is it, $24 per user?
For $24 per user with the integrations. We've actually just dropped the integrations and had done that bit manually. They were really useful, but we're just trying to keep costs down a little bit. So, but once you've got six, we had six users at $24 a user, you know, we were paying more for front than we were for Adobe.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it is a little bit expensive, in my opinion, but it does do loads, and it's one of those apps that's so useful that you pay for it anyway because you want to use it. It's one of those things.
But yeah, yeah. Is it worth using for someone like me or Ian that work by ourselves? You know, I'm just looking. I quite like the idea of being able to manage Facebook and Twitter and all of that together, and being able to push things to my CRM and, you know, that kind of stuff.
I think there are benefits for you working for yourself. It's certainly geared more towards teams.
Yeah, yeah.
And for, you know, at the minute for us, there's only really me and Dan, which, you know, and we both get a high volume of emails in. So being able to, that makes it easier for us to be able to communicate by email.
Yeah.
It's certainly very useful. They're the features we use the most, the team features, for being able to chat and share and assign emails to people.
Yeah.
But on your own, I mean, yeah, I think it could still be useful. Particularly if you're wanting to use all the integrations into your third-party services. I think it's got integrations into like Pipedrive and things like that that I know.
Well, that was the one I was thinking about, because that's what I use,
I'm pretty sure it does. You know, you'd have to look at the integration listings, but it's quite extensive what it does actually integrate into.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does integrate into Pipedrive. I've just seen it there. So, you know, it's one of those, it can help streamline your process. Mm-hmm. And manage things, and also you can set up like an inbox that clients email, so that, you know, so like you can set up your client name at whatever your company name is, and they email that one address, and it comes in as like a shared inbox.
Yeah,
and you can use it for like, you know, assigning that. You know, it's almost like a ticket manager in a way.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really useful. I don't know if it's been talked about before, but I
I don't think we have. I've seen it and I've had a bit of a look at it, but because it was for Teams, I didn't spend that long on it. But it looks brilliant.
Yeah.
Looks really good. Okay, well, let's move on to our final sponsor of the day before we wrap up the show. That's a really good set of stuff. I really like it. Okay, our second sponsor for the show is Awards. I don't know whether you've come across Awards before. So that's Awards with three W's in it, because it's WWW. See, Award. See what they did there? That's clever, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm basically, the reason that they're sponsoring the show and the reason I'm talking about them is that I'm hosting and speaking at an upcoming awards conference that they're running. So it's a kind of, there's a workshop day, which is going to happen on the 1st of February. And then there are a whole load of talks that are going to happen on the 2nd and 3rd of February. All of this is happening in London. So if you're UK-based, or if you fancy a trip to London, then you really might want to check this out. It's got some great speakers that are going to be there, not just myself. Obviously, I'm going to be hosting it, so that, in my mind, makes me the most important person, and not just the guy on the door that lets people in. Yeah, so, but I will be giving a bit of a talk. I think I'm talking about my upcoming book, User Experience Revolution. But there's Mike Coos is going to be speaking, who is talking about creative design solutions and stuff like that. This is the guy for that. Incredible designer, has done some really brilliant work over the years. A graphic designer, a web designer, an illustrator, a photographer. He is annoyingly talented. And then there's Andrew Herzog, who is a designer and thinker at Google Creative Labs. I haven't met him before. And then this one's a curious one. Somebody called Mr. Bingo. Has anybody heard of Mr. Bingo?
Yeah.
I love Mr. Bingo. Yes.
Oh, really? It's obviously just me. Who's Mr. Bingo, Andy?
I don't know what Bingo's name real name is. I actually had him on Unfinished Business when I was still doing Unfinished Business. He is an illustrator and artist and speaker. He's an incredibly funny speaker, and he does illustration work which some might feel is in poor taste. You know, he will draw willies and people shagging and things like that, but he is an incredibly funny and engaging and nice and talented illustrator.
Is he the guy that did an advent calendar?
Yes, he did, yeah, where you basically scratch off the nude pieces. And also,
yes,
he's most famous for doing this thing called hate mail, and there's a couple of books that he's produced with these postcards where you can pay him money and he will send you a unique abusive postcard that will say, you know, Paul, you're a twat, or whatever, or worse. And he's a lovely man. If you get a chance to speak to him, you should do, because he's absolutely brilliant.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to meeting him. That sounds fun. Now, it's funny that you use the word twat with me. Yeah. My son gave me a mug at Christmas, and it was a completely plain white mug. And then when you lift it up, on the bottom it's got written, I am a twat. That's love, isn't it, from your own son? Anyway, if you're interested in coming and joining me and Mr. Bingo, whoever he is, then you could get your tickets at a discounted price, actually, if you use the code BOAGWORLD. And you could get those tickets by going to boag.world/joinme. Right, because you're going to join me. See what I did there? See, that's clever, isn't it? Better than making you spell awards with three W's, because that's just confusing. All right, so that is our last sponsor of the day. Let's wrap this baby up. Right, let's do where we can find out about each person. I think we need to begin with you, Ian, as you're currently. If people want to hire you, Ian, where can they find out about you?
The best place is probably Twitter, actually, at that Ian May, because my website's not finished yet.
Oh, no!
If I get my shuffle on today, I should get it launched. I had a holding page up for a few weeks, which was a total minimum viable product job. And then I've had some help building something and writing it, and I've been writing it. So hopefully that'll go up today or tomorrow at thatianmay.com.
Oh, you'll be all right, because this isn't going to come out for another week.
Oh, there we go. So It should be up by then. I've just set a deadline for myself.
Yeah, there you go. You got till a week tomorrow. There you go.
Right. I'm on it.
So what's that? Sorry, I missed what that URL was. I got distracted by chat.
That ianmay.com.
Okay, ianmay.com. Thank you very much. Right, Andy?
People can find me at stuffandnonsense.co.uk. And I'm on Twitter at Malarkey.
Malarkey. Ryan, what about you?
We're on nodividestudio.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Ryan Havoc.
But whether you contact him via his website, email, or Twitter, it'll all end up in Front App. And Marcus, what about you?
Headscape.co.uk, and on Twitter, Marcus67.
I've realised I've never done myself on this, so you can follow me on Twitter at BOAGWORLD, and if you want to know about the work that I do, you can go to boagworks.com, because I do occasionally work. Who knew? All right. Right. Also, feel free to contact any of the people on this week's show, and not Ian, because Ian's just a stand-in. Oh, that's so hurtful. I can't believe that came out of my mouth. I'm sorry, Ian. You're a lovely human being, but he is kind of standing in for Sam this week. But if you want to contact Ryan or Andy or Marcus or myself with ideas of what we might want to cover on the show, feel free to reach out to us on Twitter, because we've all shared our Twitter IDs. Marcus, you got a joke to finish us off with?
I have. I also like the sound of that conference, but I'm not going to be around.
Me neither.
I want to go to some more conferences this year, and that I thought, well, that looks good. And it's like, oh, dates don't fit. Never mind. Yes, I have a joke. Pretty sure I've said this one before, but I found it and liked it again. So here we go. What have Winnie the Pooh and John the Baptist got in common?
That's a very peculiar mix.
I don't know. What have Winnie the Pooh and John the Baptist got in common?
Same middle name.
Oh,
that's such a dad joke.
Do you know,
that's good. Come on. Awful.
Such a crushing disappointment.
I thought there was going to be some really clever link between them. And then that's what we get. That is just appalling.
Well, you know, start low. That's what I say.
Oh, it can only go up from here.
It's been such a good show up until then.
No, I'm finishing on a downer now. Thanks to that unhilarity.
No, let's just stop. I'm going to press the stop button.
Bye.